Well, good evening. Welcome to the museum. You've come to one of a number of lectures and events that we've had that go along with a little exhibition up in the entrance gallery, Winstrup, just a few objects from the museum's historic collection. We've got some historic objects up there, but we wanted to have some talks and events that would give some contemporary perspectives on the moon, its investigation, and indeed the subject of tonight's lecture is going back to the moon, returning to the moon. And we have as our speaker here, Professor Alan Wells. He is an emeritus professor at the University of Leicester. He was founding director of the Space Research Centre there and was also closely involved in the National Space Centre in Leicester. So he comes with a very strong pedigree to tell us about the X-Prize that is supporting returning to the moon in a robotic way. Alan.
Thank you, Stephen. Good evening. Yes, I've become involved in this project as a retirement challenge, and I must say it's proven to be very enjoyable and very interesting. What I'm going to do this evening is to tell you something about the origins of the competition and where we've got to with that competition. I'm one of the nine judges, and the fellow judge is here with us this evening, John Zarnicki. So we are well represented. We've had over a year now of that experience, which I think has been pretty elevating. And in particular, I'm going to bring you up to date with the outcome of one of the prize competitions, which is called the Milestone Prize, and then go on to talk about both the prospects and the risks for the future. So that's the kind of pattern. I'm quite happy if anyone wants to interrupt and ask a question at any time, and I certainly hope there's enough time for some questions afterwards. So, what about the competition itself? Well, the Google Lunar X Prize is a prize-driven competition, and one of the purposes of it is to stimulate a new space economy through innovation and entrepreneurship. And that is one of the motivations of the XPRIZE Foundation as a whole. And the Lunar Prize is one of a number, including fields of biomedicine, advanced engineering, deep sea exploration. But the Space Prize is of particular interest to the president of the XPRIZE Foundation. And he launched this concept about 2008. Now, prizes have a long and reputable history of stimulating change. One of the sponsors of this prize, not sponsor, patron of this prize, is actually the grandson of Charles Lindbergh. And of course, the Lindbergh flight, transatlantic flight in the 1920s, I don't recall the date, is seen as the starting point of the passenger air transport. And some people like to think that if you could create a similar sort of stimulus in getting to the moon, then this may open up exploration in the future. And then numbers of scenarios come into play. The moon as a habitation base for long-term life on the moon. Not out of the question. A lot of studies are being done on the feasibility of doing that. But the big barrier is the cost and the difficulty of getting there in the first place. Astronomy from the dark side of the moon, the far side of the moon, is an interesting question for the scientists. And then there are entrepreneurs who see this as a potential commercial growth area if they can overcome the problems that are along the way. So the challenges of the XPRIZE competition are all mixed together in this plan. So creating conditions for low cost and efficient access to the moon, supporting future lunar science and exploration, and also inspiring and engaging citizens around the world with the excitement of science, technology and innovation. And I can really demonstrate in the course of some of the pictures I've got that the people actually going for this are young, enthusiastic, dynamic and absolutely committed. And it's great to be connected with them. So the prize itself, grand prize, the challenge that's laid down, is to be the first privately funded lunar mission. And to achieve that prize, the competitors need to achieve a safe and successful soft landing on the moon, deploy a rover or a transport vehicle of some kind to travel 500 metres, and if you look at the wording of that, it may seem a bit strange, but over, under, or on the lunar surface, so nothing is excluded. If you want to build a rabbit warren to get from place A to B, you can try. And then, more prosaically, to send back mooncasts consisting of high-resolution imaging, data and video. Two of these are required to satisfy the prize condition. One, when they land, to prove that they've landed, and the other, when they have travelled the required distance to prove that they've done that. And of course, behind all this is the irritation of planetary and lunar explorers of the Channel 4 broadcast, which claimed that the whole Apollo program was a total hoax and it was all done in a Hollywood studio. So one of the roles of the judges actually is to turn up and say, no, it wasn't Hollywood, it was real. So we've got that to contend with eventually. The predecessor to the Google Lunar X Prize was the Ansari Prize, and that began as a $10 million prize purse for the first launcher system that could escape the Earth's atmosphere, return to Earth, and then fly back into orbit within 14 days, fly back to above the Earth's atmosphere. And that was a challenge that was laid down. It has very clearly led to the formation and creation of a new launcher, relatively low-cost launcher industry in the private sector in the United States, taking the place of government-funded, expensive launcher systems and the SpaceX Falcon launcher is an example of that, which is now regularly flying to the International Space Station to service the space station with deliveries, not yet able to ferry astronauts to and from the space station. They're still developing that second stage, and NASA and the other community using the International Space Station still rely on Russian launchers to replace and turn around the astronauts. But nevertheless, this does now look like a 1.5 billion private sector space industry. And Buzz Aldrin has said that he thinks that the Ansari Prize should be viewed as a giant leap forward, and I don't know why HP keeps interrupting. So that really was one of the stimuli for going further and pushing the space program towards hopefully low-cost, frequent visits to the moon. Initially, there were something like 26 teams entered in around, I'm not sure of the date, I think it was around 2008. Some of them were not serious contenders when they began to realise what was involved and dropped out. But there still are 18 teams in running, and we are beginning to see a kind of bunch of front runners that are emerging based upon the work that they've done, which is visible, of developing the landers and the instruments and so on, and also making progress with the fundraising and sponsorship. And indeed, some teams recognise that on their own that is beyond their capabilities, and that there are some serious negotiations going on for teams to merge or teams to hitch a ride on somebody else's launcher and share the costs. So all that is going on. And this is about where John and I came into the business. Google decided that they needed independent judges to oversee this process and to adjudicate on that the rules of the competition were complied with, and there was a selection, and 9 judges were selected back in August of 2013. And there are 9 judges, 6 US, John and myself from the UK, and a 3rd European from the European Space Agency. The judges were appointed at around this time because the Milestone Prizes programme was beginning to take shape. And the purpose of the Milestone Prize is to give a stimulus, both in a financial stimulus and establishing serious targets for the teams to move to make major advances towards flight readiness. So in a way, it was also designed by XPRIZE to actually see who were the serious competitors and who were perhaps not so serious about it. And that's where we came in. There were three classifications of prizes. The landing subsystem Milestone Prize was set at $1 million, and there was $1 million for up to 3 teams to be based upon the advances they had made in the development of the hardware and the software to enable a soft landing on the moon. I would say that the judges can congratulate themselves on putting that prize in, because the first ideas coming from XPRIZE, as I recall, they were quite interested in the other 2 prizes, but we told them that if they didn't address the question of the lander, then the rest of it was window dressing. So we convinced them that they ought to give some attention to that. Nevertheless, the other Milestone Prize for mobility, this requirement to be able to travel at least 500 metres after landing is set at $500,000, and up to 4 teams could win that. And then there was a $250,000 prize, again allowing for up to 4 teams to produce these moon casts in realistic conditions, such that firstly they'd convinced the XPRIZE people that what they were able to do met the conditions, but secondly to generate interesting, I hope, visual graphics for promotion and presentation purposes. So those were the prizes. And the objectives behind that prize were to assist the teams towards their ultimate Google Lunar XPRIZE mission goals, the big prize, and also to assist the teams with fundraising and sponsorship towards their launch attempt. And the approach was to require the teams to demonstrate advanced progress towards the flight readiness of these mission-critical subsystems. Notice that each of the subsystems related directly to one of the prize objectives. And looking at the technical steps that teams need to accomplish whilst preparing for their main XPRIZE mission. And then the other criterion is that the prize money awarded from this would be brought forward in the event of the eventual Google Lunar XPRIZE or second prize winnings. I think I've missed out a rather important point to backtrack about the grand prize. The grand prize is actually $20 million for the first team to accomplish this, and there's a second prize of $5 million for that. So if a team were to win $1 million on the Milestone Prize and then go on and win the grand prize, they would get another $19 million. That's all that. However, participation in the Milestone Prize competition was optional, and not all teams took up the challenge, but the grand prize is still open to any of the teams still in the competition. So these are the judges. I think I've covered that. I will emphasise the heavy type at the top. We are independent. We have no affiliations to Google. We have no affiliations to the XPRIZE Foundation, nor any of the teams. So we can stand to be independent. And I think that's important to dwell on that point a little bit, because another very famous prize to stimulate innovation and generation of wealth was the Harrison clock, the longitudinal clock competition, which poor Mr. Harrison won against all the prejudices of the judges who wanted to award it to an astronomer. And he actually succeeded, as you probably, as everybody knows, but he still had to wait 40 years before the prize from the government was actually awarded. So I'm on record saying that I will insist that no team has to wait 40 years to receive the prize, even if they win it. So there we are, 9 members, international panel. We do have expertise from a number of different fields. I mean, I'm an experimental space scientist who run a number of missions, as Steve has said. John is a planetary scientist, so we're closely associated, and we have similar experiences. Some of the other people on this list are engineers who've worked in the space industry in the United States, and another is a person who is very interested in the development of space tourism and so on. So we are a mixed group. What our functions are: to provide interpretation of the rules to the team, and of course sometimes we have to dig very carefully into what those rules are, what they mean, and sometimes it's necessary to take legal advice, and so we go back to XPRIZE if there's a legal issue that we're not clear on. But our main function last year was monitoring the activities in this Terrestrial Milestone Prize program and to observe, and subsequently we will come into play again, observing the XPRIZE missions when they occur, and to validate the team prizes, the team's claims for prizes. And there's another element of this, which is that under the rules of the competition, because it's intended as a private venture funded activity, there is a rule that says that the amount of government support for any of these projects of direct funding must be less than 10% of the total cost. So we're now actually talking to audit companies as to how we are going to do that. I mean, we do not have an auditor amongst us, but our view is that if we're serious about this and we have to sign off on the line, and particularly if we say, you know, actually that team didn't comply with the rules, so they can't have the money, we want a good basis for that. So we're actually now bringing an audit company in to produce the guidelines for, it's our decision in the end, but we need professional support for that activity. There were 5 finalist teams that got through the first level of selection in January of last year, and they're listed there. Moon Express, I'm going to say a bit more about these teams, so just remember the names at the moment. Moon Express, Astropoti, Part-Time Scientists, Indus, and Hakuto in Japan. During the first 3 months of last year, the teams were working towards their own stated objectives. We had selected on the base, out of 13 team proposals, we selected these 5, and some of them were involved in 1 of the prizes, some were involved in all 3 of the prizes. And during the the first 9 months of last year, we were visiting the teams, seeing what was going on, discussing amongst ourselves what they were doing was going in the right direction, but not advising them, not mentoring them, but really as passive observers as far as the teams were concerned. And then we called for quite a number of reports, as well as making reports ourselves on the visits that we made, and various of us were assigned to different teams, so we didn't all go around not handy. So in the last quarter we were very deeply involved in both evaluating what we'd seen and then making sure that we'd got a consensus amongst ourselves and a balance as to where we would set the bar for failure or success. And I think that was a very interesting activity. And then the final awards were made just last month in California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco. What I'm going to do now is just sort of show you just some images of what was going on. I'm going to skip through this fairly quickly, although there's quite a few pictures. And in between, for your sort of hopefully some interest, here's a few little snippets about the moon that you may or may not know. So the land area of the moon surface is 37.9 million square kilometres, larger than every continent beside Asia. Interesting. So the first team that we are going to speak about is Astrobotic. They are a startup company based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with a lot of connections and spin out from Carnegie Mellon University. They have had numbers of other projects as a startup, but they entered this competition with a very ambitious plan to build a lander, get it on the moon, and do all the other good things. And they plan to provide low-cost access to the moon with the capacity to deploy not just one rover, but a number of rovers, with cost sharing between other third-party partners. What they've done in the few months that we've been looking at them is concentrating on the navigation and the guidance of the propulsion system to get them out of lunar orbit down onto the surface of the moon. And I think that, and what they did with that was to team up with a company on the west coast that had already developed a flying test bed sort of system that as part of another competition. And so these two organisations have merged their interests. So Astrobotic are now using the propulsion system that Masten had previously tested. And what they did in the XPRIZE competition that was really smart was to say, okay, well, this Masten thing sort of takes off, flies around, and lands under automatic control. We'll break into that control system and put our system in, and we will autonomously direct this flying bedstead of theirs to a different landing place under different conditions. And they succeeded in doing that. So all of the software and the control of the propulsion system was fully tested, as we say, end to end, to prove that their surface recognition, event recognition, so they have cameras on board, and if they see a large object as they're coming down, descending, or if it's a crater and they don't want to go there, they've got a diversion facility in there to fly around until they find a safe place to drop down. And they tested all of that in those few weeks. They also have a mobility test bed vehicle that they have run tests up to 1,000 metres, again with this autonomous navigation and guidance capability, and have made good progress also with their camera system. What you'll see there, they're out in the Mojave Desert, and the thing behind them is this Masten flying test bed device, and they had some exciting times firing that off and integrating their own system with it. And the various objects that you see in the background there are these objects that they have to fly and avoid. So they're real things. They're not pre-programmed, I can assure you. So that was that. And there's another picture of the device being hoisted up out of the shed to set it up on the launcher. I didn't have enough confidence to put videos into this slideshow, but there are some rather fun little pictures of all this kind of thing on YouTube. All of these teams are very media aware, and they put out their latest results and images from these active tests on YouTube. So they've all got websites which they're very busy with. And this is the other part of their activity, of demonstrating the configuration of the land that they're developing. So you see on there the three tripod legs for soft landing or telescopic legs, and the what they've not got in there, we know, is the final version of the propulsion system, but you can see the rocket nozzle sticking up above, and they're doing a lot of work on the best configuration of fuel tanks and the propulsion system, the rocket, that will allow this thing to descend slowly and under control to touch down on the moon surface. So we had fun with them. Okay, impact craters. The largest impact crater in the entire solar system is on the moon. Take that home and write it into your essay the next time. You'll still have an essay about the moon. And so here they are, with their satellite land Earth thing out in the Mojave Desert on the left, as you look at it. And on the right is their rover crawling up over the desert landscape. And that is, to be able to do that reliably under power and totally remotely, has been challenging, I think, for all of the teams. So Astrobotics were awarded the $1 million Lander Prize for their advances in the guidance system, and the $500,000 prize for the technical progress made with their rover and demonstrating its ability to travel autonomously over kilometres, actually. And the imaging prize for the quality of their simulated mooncasts. They plan to launch their lunar lander most probably on a SpaceX Falcon rocket, but they have not yet announced the date. The Japanese team, Hakuto, are only focusing on developing a rover. They have a heritage here, a long history of robotics and of robotic rovers. And I think one of the things that particularly interested me about this team is that they have developed a number of these rovers that take part in robotic competitions annually. There's one competition that takes place in Utah where rovers are fired up, shot into the air with small rockets, and which can travel up to a couple of hundred feet, and then they land on parachute. The rover's deployed, and the rovers have to navigate back to the starting point. And this team actually won that Utah competition on more than one occasion. To live on the moon with a rover like this, it has to withstand the radiation environment of the journey to the moon and the radiation environment on the moon. And they paid a lot of attention to that and developed this rover system that is radiation hardened, that is able to withstand a radiation environment. And they've actually used their rovers to investigate regions in the Fukushima nuclear plant where the radiation contamination levels are too high for humans to go in. So I think that's a good example of the kind of spin-off from this initiative that comes up in other areas. So there's one view of their little rover. And when they were doing the mobility test, they did it blind, so to speak. So the controllers were in a tent, and they couldn't see what the vehicle was doing. And they also introduced the 2.6 seconds delay, communication delay from Earth to Moon into the transmissions to the rover. So they were setting up an arrangement that was very close to the real operational arrangements. And on one occasion, the rover got stuck, and they tried all sorts of things to get it out. And on one occasion, they did get it out. On another occasion, it didn't. And they had to give up the test and come out and have a look. And what they found was that these little ratchet wheels that you can see there were actually picking up stones that happened to be about the same size as the gap between. And then the wheels were actually sticking, getting stuck against the body of the rover. Now, I say, I should have thought that. But the fact is, this is one of the values of a test like this, because it revealed They flaw in their design, they know how to fix it, they will meet the common way and dealt with the problem and go back and retest. So they've gained knowledge, information and confidence from doing this test. Another moon fact, numerous craters on the moon are permanently shadowed and many of these hold deposits of water ice. Okay, if humans are going to go and live on the moon at any time in the future, they need to know this because water is vitally important, both for life survival, but also as a means of generating fuel for on flights beyond the moon, onwards and outwards. So there is actually a water prize in the long-term prize scheme for Google, if any team wants to go and explore that. And come up with more positive evidence both of where it is and how they can get at it, there's a potential prize for that. I'm back on Hakuto again, but I did say they have two rovers in their scheme. There's a little two-wheeler that is towed by the other one, by the four-wheeler one, but the two-wheeler one can also manoeuvre in its own right. So they have two chances to meet the 500-metre mobility test, but they also have an ambition to essentially abseil down into features in the moon's surface known as skylights, which are sort of hollow tubes like lava tubes, which have recently been identified from observations, and these guys are planning to visit one of those and essentially abseil down this little two-wheeler to explore those conditions. Okay, very interesting, exciting, the fact that you can discover these things in the first place, but this may be another area where shielding from the radiation environment would produce a kind of habitat that humans could survive in. So these are the kind of thought connections that go ahead. And this is the Japanese team, all very exciting because the rover is sitting inside that box, and that box is the chamber that actually fits on the spacecraft. So they have to get this box dropped down onto the spacecraft and the lander lands, and then drop it open and the rover can drive out. First time they tried it, it worked. They found that it was a design fault, and have gone ahead. Another example of the value of systematic testing. And that does lead me on to the next point, which is that this team are actually going to fly, hitch a ride on the Astrobotic lander. So Astrobotic lander has got space on there for up to three rovers. Now, I think the judges are pretty interested in this because we begin to visualise that what we might have here is a rover race on the moon. And I think some judges might even think of setting up as bookmakers to run the bets that would go on that. So, but I think that's going to raise some really interesting questions for the judges to adjudicate how that happens, how that works. So, other things. So, two rovers to demonstrate the ability to do the 500 metres. I've said 1,000 there, that's wrong. As I've said, they're going to the moon with Astrobotic. Okay, something else on the moon. Standing on the moon, Neil Armstrong was able to cover the Earth in the sky with his thumb. And so we've got the first lunar measurement of the parallax of the Earth from the moon. And this young man in the Japanese team obviously wants to follow in Neil Armstrong's footsteps, although that was a pretty cloudy old moon in Japan when that picture is taken. The next team is the Indian team, Team Indus, and they're a startup company but closely linked with the Indian Space Research, Research Agency, ISRO. They are planning to develop a, if you like, they call it a common user lander structure as a universal platform for subsequent missions. So they see this as a development that they can carry forward and then provide that as a market to other space space industries, national space industries, international space industries, but very much with an eye on the Indian Space Research Organisation that has got very ambitious plans for lunar and planetary exploration. And they are planning to send three separate lunar rover devices to the moon in their broad scheme of things. Whether they will achieve that with Google, within the Google program remains to be seen. But there's the team admiring their little rover that they've built, which has this telescopic mast for the camera to sit up, be able to look over rocks and undulations in the surface. And one of our other judges there, the guy in the black on the left as you look at him, is admiring their structure that they built, which they built in an incredibly short period of time. By the time they got to mid-year, their plans were pretty much in disarray. Most of their designs were beginning to, they were beginning to realise that they weren't working, they wouldn't work. And they went back and went in with a complete redesign and then built this thing in about 2 months flat and tested it about a few days before the competition closing date. And this is the judges and the exercise people out there were really quite astonished by this, because they were taken to this fairly grubby area with chickens running around on the ground and so on, and there was this white container standing in the corner. And said, well, what's that? Said, well, that's, we've got our lander in there. So I said, but we can't bring it out here, we'll take it somewhere else before. He said, no, we must see it. So they reluctantly opened it up, chewed the chickens away, and went into that again. So what they succeeded in convincing us that they did deserve the lander prize for the design of the lander and the successful tests that they did on it in that very short period of time. They expect to launch their spacecraft on an Indian launcher, but no dates announced yet. Okay, no dark side of the moon. The moon does rotate, it's locked in step with the Earth, so the far side does see sunlight. So forget about those songs about dark side of the moon, it's all nonsense. Moon Express are a Californian company. XPRIZE work as a big part of their program, but alongside other developments for NASA's planetary program. Their landing mobility vehicle was unveiled in December of 2013, and some of the tests that they've been doing in 2014 have been developments on the back of that. But the innovative thing here is what they call a novel hopper technology for their mobility. They have had a successful tethered flight of their MX-1 vehicle and a tethered flight with the control system working in closed loop, and taken that a lot further. And they plan, among other things, during the Google XPRIZE mission to deliver to use the XPRIZE mission to be able to deliver the International Lunar Observatory to the moon. And they have a precursor small telescope that they're planning to take on the XPRIZE mission. So what is hopping? Well, a very good friend of mine who is a professor at MIT was very much involved in some of the early stages of the development of this concept. And so whereas most vehicles land on other planets, either traveling to other planets, have either orbited from high up and landed, or they've landed and just sat in one place, or they've landed and then slowly rolled along the surface, the rover concept. But hopping is another way of doing it. So what they describe it as sitting in one place, so where it says sort of the accelerate, so this might be where you have a successful landing in one place, you've got the ability to take off again and then fly and coast horizontally, then slow down again and descend under controlled conditions. You have a different way of getting around. And in particular, some golf enthusiastic has described it as instead of trying to hit the ball from the fairway and going for a hole in one, land safely on the green, presumably, and then just chip in with the second movement. So I think we get the picture, and that's what they are developing. The advantage of it is that the amount of fuel that's required for those two operations combined is significantly less than if you did it all completely separately. And so what the mass comes down, and therefore the launch cost comes down. So in economic terms, it sounds very compelling. Another fact for you, 12 people have been on the surface of the moon, 24 have flown around it. Neil Armstrong was the first, and Buzz Aldrin was the second to go down. So here's this little device, and you can see now that it is in fact quite a small vehicle, and the fuel tanks are these black things around the edge. And what you can't see, I'm sorry, is the control jets for this controlled descent and reascent flight, but they genuinely had a go at it. They weren't confident enough to let it loose completely on its own, so it was held on this high cherry picker train and sat on the ground. You may see those masts and things there, but they were the camera heads, and it was tethered for some of the early tests, and then they took the big risk and said, okay, let's let it go. The only tether that remains is the umbilical that connects connects through the crane to the vehicle itself. And they let it go. They achieved, I would say, semi-stable flight. And the judge was there, was a bit concerned that it wasn't really stable, and he had to leave to this took place at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. But the following day they did it again and got a genuine controlled soft lift and a soft landing. And that's a real big achievement. The video of this, and I do apologize, I haven't brought it with me, but couldn't get it on here. It looks quite hilarious with this thing sort of zooming around in the sky. A bit like, you know, when you release a blown up balloon and it goes everywhere. It was kind of like that. So anyway, we thought that was worth the prize. So they were awarded the $1 million lander prize for their successful flight manoeuvring tests, and the $250,000 imaging prize for their simulated moon casts. And as I said, because of the low mass of the Moon Express landing propulsion system, they expect their launch cost to be much lower than most all previous lunar projects. So, what about moon fact? The cliffs of the famous moon crater Aristarchus are 2 miles high, twice as deep as the Grand Canyon. To come to the last team, the German and Austrian team, part-time scientists, that both John and I spent quite a bit of time visiting them and seeing how they were getting on, and we got to know them quite well. They're a startup company of young entrepreneurs and engineers with a lot of experience, I think, in advanced robotics and material science and engineering, and no experience whatsoever of space mission. And this is quite incredible that they've embarked upon this. And they have exhibited that robotics expertise with the development of their rover, and the optical system for their camera I think, the best one that we saw, to be off the record. They have no previous space mission, and they are self-financing. So they've set up this company called Part-Time Scientists, which exactly describes what they are. And most of them don't take a salary out of the company. They log their time, and that goes into the equity of the company. So their view is, if we succeed in the long run, we are the shareholders, and we've earned those shareholdings by virtue of this. I think there's another aspect of this this project which appeals to me, and that is, I think it opens up a different approach to lunar geology and studies of the lunar surface and materials, because there's another parallel development. As well as this robotic capability, and this thing is only It's a bit bigger than this desk, but it's a, sort of about a metre by 800 or something. But the camera is very, very compact, and it uses a lot of the most recent developments in optics, in sensors and electronics, so that these are very, very tiny instruments. And in their, and come to that, the current version of the camera head, there's a stereo camera, which geologists use a great deal for looking at crystal formations and cleavage patterns and all that. The centre one is a telephoto lens for ranging, and then the two apertures at the top are vacant. And we've talked to them, and they see those as locations for other instruments. And it's quite feasible now that with other optical approaches, you could have a very high resolution spectrometer on this instrument in a very small compact field with optical fibres from these lens assemblies taking the signals back into a little spectrometer. And they have other ideas for using these other apertures. And it's not beyond my imagination in any way that a swarm of small rovers, if you get them onto the moon, could do very efficient lunar geology and exploration, that if you wanted to do it remotely with an orbiting satellite, you would be talking in a $250 million price bracket. And I think there's another area there that is emerging. So there they were testing the camera in a lunar simulator in Bremen. I was there for that. And they were awarded the $500,000 system. They were awarded the $500,000 mobility prize and the $250,000 imaging prize. They planned to send their lander to the moon on a Russian Dnieper rocket, which is the cheapest one that's available at the moment. So, draw this attention to John's interest here, because this is the XPRIZE people made a mistake, and they forgot about that the European Space Agency, as well as China, India, Japan, and Russia, and the United States, have sent missions into lunar orbit. And so, John, I hope I've done you justice, because you were the person that pointed this out to me. So what to expect in 2015-2016. Continuing development following the successes of the Terrestrial Prize. Other teams will be appearing with their own advances that maybe we haven't seen much of yet. There's the Spanish team, the Israeli team, the Italian team, all quite active, that didn't get into the Terrestrial Prize competition. Probably some mergers, probably other areas of cooperation like launch sharing. But we do expect launch announcements for missions in 2016. How many is an open question. It could be as small as one, it could be even smaller. Now, what about other aspects of this? The London Economic Study, which was published a couple of years ago, where it talks about the market opportunities for Google XPRIZE teams at $1.9 billion during the following decade, and increasing to $6.4 billion over a 25-year timescale. These are some of these sort of economic sort of future projections based on sort of rough estimates and appreciation of what spacefaring nations and private sector might want to do. But nevertheless, there does appear to be a growing view that there is a market, there is an economic market for this. In terms of the competition itself, the XPRIZE Foundation has been tracking this, and they consider that something like $46.5 million have been committed to this project amongst all partners, with an increase of $16 million in since 2013, when the Milestone Prize was launched. And I think that is a very clear indication of the stimulus of that competition in increasing the level of activity. So 16 million has been put in competition for 6 million, which is, if not a business people tell you, that's a good return on investment. And the number of years committed to this in this speculative way is estimated at 724 person years. Anyway, where have we got to? Well, 5.25 million out of 6 million was awarded to the five teams, the competition for the grand prize has been extended until the 31st of December, and there is this ride-share agreement between Astropotic and Hakuto, which has now been published, and I think I've dealt with the question of the London economics. So the remaining prizes, 20 million is the first private funded body or organisation to complete all the necessary steps of the prize competition. There is a second prize of 5 million. There are bonus prizes with a total purse of 4 million for a number of other activities. One of them to visit again one or more of the Apollo heritage sites. And another is discovery of water. Another is to survive the lunar night. Now, the temperature conditions on the moon between daytime and nighttime are very severe. It is a big demand to require electronic systems and mechanical systems to survive the lunar night and come through to another day cycle, some 14 days later. It's not beyond the possibilities of good design, and so there is a challenge there. There's a range prize, so although 500 metres is the minimum requirement, there is a challenge. So instead of 500 metres, can we do 5 kilometres and so on. And there's a diversity prize for very good reasons to encourage as much diversity as possible in this burgeoning industry. And there is a further 4 million not fully confirmed for some additional milestone prizes as a further stimulus following on from the terrestrial milestone prize, which I think XPRIZE do consider it to be. I made the point that there's a lot of people involved in this who are young, enthusiastic, committed, and having a great time. So here they are. This is the Astropotic team out in the out in a gravel pit in Pennsylvania, actually, but still enjoying it. This is the Japanese team, and this is the Indian team, and this is the Moon Express team with their famous hopper. I would like to finish by saying I hope you join me in wishing them well with this exciting.